Welcome to Political Rewind. What a day to have everybody gathered in the studio to talk about Super Tuesday. Truly a remarkable night in American politics. In 1992, Bill Clinton was struggling in New Hampshire as the result of stories about the affairs he'd had, the Jennifer Flowers story broke, that sort of thing. And it looked like his poll numbers were plummeting as a result of that. Clinton ended up finishing second in New Hampshire. And James Carville, his campaign consultant, dubbed him the comeback kid, which wasn't really actually quite true at that moment. But Greg Bluestein, last night, we really saw a comeback.
maybe a resurrection? I don't know what term to use, but it was an epic night for Joe Biden last night.
An epic night, which we're going to talk about, and talk about the consequences of that and what other candidates are dealing with today as they sort through the results of the election. We have got Greg Bluestein, political reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, here with us. You read him every day in the paper, mostly on the front page. Thanks for joining us.
Busy night.
And you're here with the A-team. Dr. Audrey Haynes, political science professor from the University of Georgia, Dr. Alan Abramowitz, and Dr. Andra Gillespie from Emory University, and Dr. Amy Steigerwald of Georgia State University. You all have become so important, I think, to our listeners' understanding of how things are developing politically in this remarkable election year. So thank you all for coming back in again today. Let's just go over it very quickly. So here's the basics. Joe Biden wins Alabama, Arkansas, Massachusetts, Minnesota, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, and Virginia. He is leading in Maine, and we're still waiting for the final numbers there. And we're still waiting for California, where they had some massive problems with voting machines. But it appears that California is much closer than people expected. Biden and Bernie Sanders, not that big a gap separating them as they try to finish up their vote counting.
Yeah, the Associated Press called the California race for Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, but they're the only ones that did. Several outlets. Nobody else did.
Haven't done that yet. But look, I mean, the biggest, there's a lot of surprises last night, but among the biggest, Texas going for Joe Biden, Massachusetts, mm-hmm. where he hardly campaigned, going for Joe Biden, Minnesota, where he didn't step foot, going for Joe Biden on the strength of Amy Klobuchar's endorsement, and of course Elizabeth Warren finishing in third place in her own home state.
Yeah, let's mention a few other results of last night. Audrey, Bernie Sanders did win Colorado, Utah, Vermont, and as Greg says, AP calls him the winner in California, but no other news organization so far has been willing to make that case. As Greg points out, Elizabeth Warren, a very disappointing finish for her and her people. Third in her home state, third to Biden. Biden wins it, and Sanders comes in second.
Yeah, that was remarkable. I will tell you that in all the multivariate models we've ever used, we put home state in there to count for the little bounce that you're going to get, to control for the natural, positivity that most home states have, and home states have regions for their candidates, and that seemed to be lacking. But most of us who follow politics knew that Warren, for a significant amount of time, has not been super popular in her state.
Well, I think she was hurt by the perception that she was no longer a viable candidate. You know, I think that voters just don't want to vote for a candidate who has no chance of winning the nomination. It was a bad night for Michael Bloomberg.
Terrible night
too,
for
I think
Bloomberg,
we should say,
yeah.
as well.
Well, I mean, and I think for Elizabeth Warren, I think she got a bounce. It was just on the Titanic. And so the fact that she got above 20% in her home state, I think, was the hometown surge. But given the fact that this was a doomed candidacy and that the handwriting was on the wall, you know, even people who probably did like her weren't willing to give her support.
So as long as Alan mentioned it, Amy, and then I want to go around and I'm just going to give you free rein to give us your take on yesterday. But before we get to that, as long as Alan mentioned Bloomberg, mm-hmm. Amy, Bloomberg spent some $200 million coming into Super Tuesday states. This was his first day on the ballot. Am I wrong about the number?
200 million? I thought it was something.
I'm talking about in Super Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he spent far more than that overall.
Half a billion dollars.
Okay, yeah. So let's just use half a billion as a figure. And for that, he did win
American Samoa. He spent 75% of the GDP of American Samoa in order to win 5 of the electoral votes there, because Tulsi Gabbard also won in American Samoa. So congratulations to the two of them there. I think that is sort of an important point of all of this, is it does suggest that simply spending a lot of money does not have the payoff that a lot of people, I think, were worried that it did. So he did not do well there. Steyer also, right? I mean, Steyer banked a lot on South Carolina, spent, I think it was about $100 million, maybe more there. Again, wasn't able to do it. And I think that has sort of an important point. I think the other part, something we were talking about right before, is that, you know, a lot of people are mentioning that, you know, Warren, on some level, kind of took one for the team for going after Bloomberg and saying, like, he's the big threat. And so I'm going to really focus attention on ensuring that he's not able to do well there, which didn't seem to pay off for her in the long term, but did, I think, stop Bloomberg in his tracks. But yes, I mean, I guess if, for those of us who are worried about this, and I know at least three of us have had Ellen Weintraub on our campuses. I think later today she's at Emory, and she was at Georgia State on Monday. Commissioner of the FEC, and sort of really talking about issues of money in campaigns and dark money spending and all of these issues. I mean, here we knew where the money was coming from, but the sort of real concern that somebody could just buy an election doesn't seem to be working, because at the end of the day, voters aren't listening to that.
I want to go around. I want to get everybody a chance to just say, here's what I take away from last night. And as I do that, I'll say that as of an hour ago, and this will change in over the next hours ahead, Biden was leading Bernie Sanders now suddenly, 453 delegates to Sanders, 373. Remarkable. All right, so let's get takeaways from everybody. Bluestein, just a general statement. Don't filibuster. Just a general statement about what Super Tuesday meant to you.
You teed me up, because not long ago we were talking about Super Tuesday being this night where Bernie Sanders gets this insurmountable delegate lead, and now Joe Biden appears to at least have, if not the edge, he's neck and neck with Bernie Sanders, and with the likelihood that some of these other candidates could drop out of these races, he becomes the consolidated centrist candidate who gets all that mainstream support. And so we're looking probably at a replay of 2016, where we have a long, long slog, but between two candidates, not 3, 4, or 5.
All right, I want to pick up on that later, but again, I want everybody to get a chance. Andra?
Well, there are a lot of things to say. I think we'll talk about Bernie Sanders a little bit later, so I think I'll reserve that. I kind of want to go back to what I said on Monday, which I think may have sounded a little punchy, but I guess I was trying to foreshadow what I thought was going to happen today with Mike Bloomberg. I agree with Amy. Money doesn't necessarily buy you votes. Or you could sort of tee it up, and if people aren't buying what you're selling, then that's it. And I think people just weren't buying what Bloomberg was selling, especially since he had done so poorly in his debate performances. But I think the thing to kind of take away from the Bloomberg thing is, what's the return on investment? So, yeah, you could shock and awe and overwhelm, a campaign. You could buy the best talent at triple scale, basically. And that doesn't necessarily sort of negate or take away from the fact that you actually have to, one, provide a vision, and two, do actual retail campaigning. And so I just think of what I could have done with $500 million. So, the joke about how many shoes I could buy with that, or houses. But it's also, when we got $500 million at Emory, like as a result of a patent, it was like, well, how many research projects could that inform, or how many philanthropic things? So I think people just need to be really careful with the notion that you can just throw a bunch of money around and expect to be able to get your way. Like, there's a give and take in our society, and I think that's a good thing.
Alan,
right? I mean, there's a diminishing return on spending. We clearly saw that last night. One thing that was really remarkable is that Biden won some states where he didn't campaign at all, and he had no organization.
Minnesota, as an example, Massachusetts.
He made some effort in Texas, but he spent very little there. He was badly outspent by Sanders. He was had a very little organization there, and yet he ends up winning there. Going forward, I think it's going to be really interesting now to see how this dynamic plays out. It's going to become, I think, very quickly a two-person race between Sanders and Biden. Bloomberg is probably going to drop out. And Sanders signaled last night the message going forward and how he's going to go after Joe Biden on some aspects of his record and trying to target what he sees as real weaknesses there. And we'll see how Joe Biden responds to that going forward. It's going to be a tougher. It's going to be, I think, replay of 2016 in many ways is probably right.
Alan, I want to just quickly stay with you because you wrote a note this morning to all of us in which you said a number of things about the race. But here's one that I thought was particularly apt right now. Going into the next debate, Biden has to prove to Democratic voters that he deserves his newfound frontrunner status and that he can take on Bernie Sanders. Sanders is a very tough debater. We already saw in his speech last night he's prepared to go after Biden regardless of his frontrunner status. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. And so it's going to be interesting to see both how Biden responds to that, if he's really prepared to deal with those the attacks that are coming from Bernie Sanders. Ultimately, I think what's going to be interesting is to see how these two candidates come together at the end behind the winner. And can they come together? And can if Biden is ultimately the nominee, which I think is more likely, will Sanders quickly get behind him? And can he bring his supporters behind Joe Biden, which will not be easy?
Audrey?
Well, I was going to talk about the dynamics that took place. So, you know, we have seen a big shift. This is going to be an election where we talk about momentum. And interestingly enough, you know, in past elections, you needed some time to transition to get all your money in place. Biden didn't need that. He was winning in places where he really hadn't laid much of a infrastructure down, hadn't been there in person. He benefited from learning a lesson. The Democrats actually learned a lesson, I think, from 2016 and observing Republicans who were wringing their hands and watching what happened in 2016, but not being able to do anything because people stayed in the race. They had their super PACs and their sponsors. But this time, that didn't happen. You had Klobuchar, Buttigieg. Steyer didn't really contribute to that, but you had, I think I mentioned on Monday, the notion of queuing and endorsements coming in, and boy, were there a slew of them that did, and that really helped Biden a lot.
And don't forget Beto in Texas, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had Beto O'Rourke endorsed him the other night, the night before the election began. Amy, your general take? Do we get your general take?
No,
we haven't. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I would love to share it. Obviously, I'm a political scientist, so I can pontificate for hours. What I was most struck by, and I realize I maybe have sounded, you know, like I'm beating a dead horse on this, but I think it's really important given the results that came out, are the degree to which we can't try to set the narrative based upon the really early states, especially when those early states are not indicative of the broader Democratic primary electorate. I mean, we need to be clear on the degree to which Jim Clyburn endorsing Biden had a huge impact, not just in South Carolina, but more broadly, right? That now that we've got the more diverse electorates, now that we're bringing in the African-American voters, more of the women, that we're getting into areas that have larger, into states with larger metropolitan populations, et cetera, right? We're really seeing sort of a fundamentally different race. And those are the ones where Biden did well. I mean, I think the other issue that is not to be undersold is the degree to which, I mean, we are talking like, no, he had in a lot of these places no organization. He's also the former vice president of the United States. Right. There's very few people who don't know who Joe Biden is or have some idea. And, you know, he's sort of seen as comfortable. He's seen as stable. He's seen as someone that they can look to and turn to. And I think that that's important in all of that. But I think it's also important to sort of set like how much we wanted to say the narrative was set after Iowa and after New Hampshire. And it really left out sizable chunks of the Democratic Party in that narrative, which is a huge problem.
So I want to share with you all and get your response to it. I got a phone call this morning that kind of upsets the conventional thinking we've had since the South Carolina primary. Here's what I mean by that. We know that Biden had an enormous comeback in South Carolina. Money did start pouring in, but what the conventional wisdom was, oh, well, there's not enough time. to organize in states for Super Tuesday to get ads on the air in Super Tuesday states, whatever. Well, I talked, his Time buyer called me this morning and said, y'all are missing the story. We dumped a lot of money into TV in many Super Tuesday states. We were able to get spots on California had a bunch of spots. I thought that was interesting because I don't think we realized that the Biden campaign was able to turn things around and respond that quickly.
Well, I mean, I think that that's good. I would actually be more impressed if you said that you hired a bunch of field organizers to go knock on doors.
Yeah.
Because that's actually
that's a little
more
trickier, isn't it?
No, I mean, I'm just thinking of the Vavreck and Green study that basically says that TV ads don't do anything in terms of mobilization. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's great to be out there and get your name out there. But what I think voters who were paying attention did was they saw the cues. Mm-hmm. So they saw the buoyant Joe Biden in that last cacophonous debate. You saw Mike Bloomberg basically, like, you know, double down on defending stuff that was indefensible. And so you saw his campaign fortunes go down precipitously. And then you see, one, the win in South Carolina, and then you see the consolidation around Biden. That's sending all of the cues that anybody who's afraid that Bernie Sanders isn't electable needs in order to be able to kind of move forward. So, yeah, I mean, it's great that they did all of that, but hire field organizers, set up offices. That is
well,
way more important
than
Well, they
better do that moving forward. But there was this sense that what Biden had to do after South Carolina was just the talk had been, oh my gosh, let's at least he hope he gets through Super Tuesday. Not that he was going to be dominant in Super Tuesday.
I mean, one of the things he did was he couldn't reserve a lot of TV airtime because he was cash-strapped going into Saturday. But what he did, he had an explosion of Facebook and social media ads. He far outspent Bloomberg in the days coming up, the couple days preceding Super Tuesday. But the other thing that you guys will have a blast investigating and analyzing is that field game, because he didn't have a field game in a lot of these, at least a robust field operation like Mike Bloomberg, who has 50 staffers in Georgia alone, right? Mike Bloomberg had more staffers than any campaign in Alabama. That race was called the moment the polls closed. Yeah. So Mike Bloomberg had this giant field apparatus, and Joe Biden won these states that he didn't even step foot in.
Joe Biden had tremendous free media coverage.
Mm-hmm. $500 million worth.
And that's what Donald Trump had in 2016 during the Republican primaries. He didn't spend a lot of money. He was badly outspent, but he got all this free media coverage. And that I think that's what Biden got. So it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward. I mean, you know, I think he's still got some glaring weaknesses as a candidate.
Yeah, I want to talk about those in a while.
We got to talk about glaring weaknesses, too, because as I was talking about dynamics, you know, Anderson Cooper did the interview with Bernie Sanders, and Bernie Sanders said a few things that people heard. So it's there are a lot of factors. It's not just what Joe Biden did. It's what the other candidates did, and it's what Sanders is doing and saying. And one of the things he's not doing is sort of expanding his coalition. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is staying on message, and the message is a little negative because I get all of his emails, and you know they're very good because they say my name multiple times within the email. And one of them is, they're against us, Audrey. They're against us. And that's all not necessarily a message that is going to help build towards
that's
the
right.
general election.
Well, especially if us is supposed to be Democratic voters, right?
Yes.
You need them in the general election.
Can we raise the issue of whether or not the system is rigged against Bernie?
Yes.
We've got to talk about that. Could we, let me just for a moment park that. Because I want to finish with what Biden, why Biden right now. And I want to ask that, and then we definitely want to talk about Bernie. Joe Biden last night won Massachusetts and Alabama. What? When was the last time Alabama and Massachusetts were on the same page? Maybe John Kennedy in 1960? I mean, that's crazy.
Well, I don't know if it's crazy, but I think it shows. I was listening to CNN probably on Sunday, and Rick Santorum kind of dismissed Joe Biden as the Southern candidate. So, oh, yeah, he's going to sweep the South, right, because it's disproportionately black, and black folks love him. But he can't win anyplace else. The fact that he is – that he won in New England, that he is competitive in other parts of New England, that he
Maine.
May lose, like Maine. The fact that he won in Minnesota, right, is suggesting that he can put together the type of regional coalition that might actually do better than Hillary Clinton did in 2016. That's actually, I think, a really important thing to take take away that he's not just kind of a one-trick pony.
Now, blue-collar workers,
is he disorganized? Can he be undisciplined sometimes? Yeah. And so, like, those are going to be problems for him going forward. He's also going against a sometimes disorganized, undisciplined opponent in President Trump. But, you know, I think that actually challenges Bernie's idea of sort of, you know, like what the coalition is and sort of, and it should help challenge our notion for people who are on different camps of the progressive moderate debate about sort of recognizing that there is this other side and that you can't ignore like their perceptions and their feelings and their preferences as well.
So, Alan, if I were in the Trump campaign, I mean, we know that for a long time now, the Trump people have felt that Biden could be their toughest opponent, mm-hmm. apparently. I mean, that was what Ukraine may have all been about. But if I were them, I might worry about Biden for a different reason, and I want to get your thoughts on this. It seems to me that one of the reasons Biden did so well is people really are weary, just tired out of the drama around the White House these days, tired of the dramatics that just are never ending, the controversy. Yep. And Biden is this sort of sanguine alternative. Sanders isn't, because Sanders is the Democratic yep. version yep. of that. But that would worry me as a Trump person, because I wonder if there aren't Republicans out there who yep. are starting to feel that way too.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was a question in the exit polls where they asked the primary voters about, you know, do you want the Democratic Party to move to the left? Do you want it to move to the right? Or do you want it to go back kind of to, I think the wording was something like back to where it was with Obama. And in many of these states, we saw a majority of Democratic primary voters saying, let's go back, you know, kind of a restoration of Obama.
Center left.
And I think that's what Biden is benefiting from. He's now perceived, I think, as the candidate who can beat Trump again. He was, then he lost that mantle. Now he seems to have it back again for the time being. And I think you're right. I think that Sanders is viewed as a high-risk candidate by many Democratic primary voters, even if they agree with a lot of his ideas. A majority of Democrats in the exit polls in state after state, even in the South, said they agree with Medicare for all.
I was fascinated by that, but that wasn't enough to help him. Greg, I'm thinking it's not even about ideology here. It's not about center-left. It's not about whatever. It's about just who you are as an individual. It's, please, we've had enough of the Trump antics left and right. You may agree with a lot of what Donald Trump is doing, but people are just sort of weary of the behavior.
About someone who feels safe, the yeah. safe choice to lead yeah. Democrats. To the professor's point, last night Bernie Sanders at his rally in Burlington said voters don't want the same old, same old. Well, the exit polls showed that they kind of do.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Most of the voters.
Right, yeah. And I think it's important to understand that that is change in and of itself from the chaos mm-hmm. that we've experienced for the last 3 years. So, yeah, everybody wants change, but it's a question of what kind of change valence are people actually looking at. And I think we need to have that robust discussion about that, because people are saying the same thing, but they actually mean different things.
Yeah, you know, younger voters seem to be much more supportive of this idea of a very big change, the kind of change that Sanders is talking about. And that's what Sanders has kind of pitched a lot of his appeal to the Democratic electorate on, the idea that he can energize and turn out these young voters, and that would be the key to victory. And he does do extremely well with young voters, but he hasn't really increased their share of the electorate.
That's yeah. the thing.
Yes.
And that's the trouble, Amy, isn't it? That the argument that Bernie Sanders mm-hmm. makes over and over is that he'll beat President Trump because he continues to expand the base of Democratic yep. voters. And yet, in every single race we've had mm-hmm. so far, that has not happened.
No. I mean, so we're still seeing, and as we speak to all of our students, abysmal turnout rates of the 18 to 29-year-olds. The 30 to 44-year-olds are also really pretty pathetic. So all of you, like, you're old enough to have, like, gotten everything together and turn out to vote. But what we see are
Can't
high—
Can't you make it an assignment that your students
early
have to vote?
Early voting in Georgia has already started.
Yeah. So it has. And so let's get everybody out there. I have been known to do that. I don't care who you vote for, but just go vote and take your friends to vote. But I think that is a big part of this. I mean, because one of the things that's really important, so Virginia broke all mm-hmm. previous records. They doubled 2016. They broke the record that had been out there in 2008, but it was not an upsurge in, younger voters. It was instead an upsurge in those without college degrees. It was an upsurge in minorities. I mean, in many ways, it was all of the things that we've other groups that we say normally don't turn out are, in fact, turning out. Women are turning out way more than men are. And they're not necessarily voting in the same way that their husbands are, which is a huge change over the last couple decades. And I think that's an important point, that we are seeing sort of an expansion of who is voting, but it's not in the way that Bernie Sanders is reliant upon and arguing that he would be able to do successfully. And also, I mean, a lot of those newer voters went to Biden.
So I was going to mention, talk about the messaging. So if we were giving advice to Joe Biden right now, so one of the things that those younger voters and some of the others who feel excluded and who have been a part of Sanders' campaign is they feel like they need to be listened to. Mm-hmm. Everybody agrees that there are problems, but part of the division in the party is how do you solve those problems? We heard, you know, aspirational Amy, I'm more pragmatic. These are all good goals. We all want that. We all want the same thing. How do we get there? Biden has to do a good job, and he started doing it last night in his acceptance speech, mm-hmm. where he was reaching out to those young voters. I agree with you. You are right. We need to do this. I'm the guy who can do it. Bernie Sanders, on the other hand, can't do it because his ideas are, you know, on how to do it, don't work. They're not workable, or they're more extreme, or they're more radical, and we have institutions that will push back.
Right, well, and the other part is just really quickly that, I mean, there is the problem that Bernie has not been terribly successful in getting legislation passed through his numerous decades in the United States Senate. He's not great at building coalitions. He doesn't have a record to vote for, and I think that that also harms him more broadly.
I've got to get to a break. When we come back, Andre, I do want to pick up on what you're started to discuss, and that is where, and it's a larger question. It's what do we expect the reaction of Bernie Sanders to be to the Biden sweeping victories, and what does it mean to the party? How is he going to comport himself? All of that's going to be very important as we move forward. So let's take a break right now. We'll be back with Greg Bluestein and the A-Team in just a moment. All right, we're back on a very exciting day in politics. You know, whether you're Democrat, Republican, watching an election like we saw last night unfold, to see the dynamics, to see the surprises, this is all a part of why we are so fascinated, as this group here is, about politics. All right, so we've talked a bit about Joe Biden. We're going to talk more about him because, as you alluded to a little while ago, Alan, the road ahead for Joe Biden is not necessarily lined with rose petals. He's going to have to be a different kind of candidate in many ways, and we'll get to that in a second. But, Andre, you started to talk about something that I think is worthy of a conversation. Sanders' response to suddenly losing, as he did, is going to be very important for Democrats to watch moving forward. I mean, there are people to this day who think Bernie Sanders' kind of angry campaign in 2016, even past the time he knew Hillary Clinton was going to be the nominee, did enormous damage to her in the general election. So talk to us about your thoughts about Sanders right now and how he proceeds.
I think in terms of always saying that folks are out to get you is problematic. It is the responsibility of media. I mean, a lot of this is directed towards the media, so he thinks he's not getting a fair shake from reporters because they're critiquing him. I mean, and it's the same problem that I see with President Trump. If you're a public official, people are going to ask tough questions, and they are not obligated to be nice to you. In fact, it's their job to actually ask probing questions and put you on the hot seat to hold you accountable. But also with respect to if the rules go against him. So we've seen the establishment kind of consolidate around Joe Biden, and it looks like it's going to continue to consolidate, you know, with the imminent departure of Mike Bloomberg. To say that all of a sudden that they're against you just seems to me very disingenuous, because as the second place finisher in 2016, Bernie Sanders had a ton of leverage to rewrite the rules. I mean, first of all, they're just some substantive things Like, would there have been a $15 minimum wage added to the party platform? Like, there are lots of ways from sort of an idea standpoint that Sanders has had a permanent impact on Democratic Party politics in this generation. But he also had an impact on changing delegate allocation rules. There are no superdelegates on the first ballot. Like, these are big changes, right? And so if he doesn't win based on the rules that he helped write, for you to claim that everybody is against you just as crazy, or that there is some type of cabal that's organizing against you, doesn't make sense at all. And then you also just have to accept that you got out-campaigned and that people, not enough of a critical mass of people were buying what you're selling. It doesn't mean I want to discount Bernie supporters, and I just want to be very clear to them. I think they have a role in the party, but also you just kind of have to accept that there are these agreed upon norms and rules that you participated in that were established at the beginning, and you can't pick up your marbles and go home if it doesn't work out for you.
And it wasn't a billionaire that did it, right?
I think it's interesting to pick up on what you're saying. Amy, a week ago, it was the Biden campaign that was pointing out to media that the Democratic primaries were operating under rules that disadvantaged them that had been set by the Sanders people after 2016, which required the 15% threshold in each state, that sort of thing. And so now coming out of Super Tuesday, suddenly it's the Sanders people who are upset about the rules.
Yes. And I think the other issue about this that is, you know, somewhat concerning is, you know, there have been a number of people, including Marianne Williams, who has been a surrogate for Bernie recently, suggesting that sort of last night was a coup. It was a coup by voters who turned out and they simply chose somebody else. That, I think, is a real issue to kind of go forward on that. There are sort of these discussions suggesting that certain candidates are harming all of it, that they're undercutting the cause, that also that perhaps certain groups of voters, women, minorities, are being led around by the nose by an establishment. And all of that, I mean, is really insulting to those groups of voters, and also makes it very difficult to then say to them, if you do later on win the nomination, come join me, because you've said to them, I think you're not smart enough to vote on your own. I think you're being led around. There's a lot of rhetoric there that makes it really hard to coalesce. And the issue is that if you're going to run to be the nominee for a party, you then, at the end of the day, in fact, have to represent that party. I mean, there is sort of an interesting thing that if you are trying to be anti-establishment, you're going for the most establishment position that's ever existed, which is a representative of the party.
I do want to be careful, Greg, to make sure we, because I think we all realize this. Joe Biden has by no means wrapped up the nomination as a result of Super Tuesday. Bernie Sanders is very much alive. Mm-hmm. There is going to be a battle now probably between the two of them. And we'll talk a little bit about what happens to Elizabeth Warren and what happens to Mike Bloomberg. But this is the two-man race that Sanders still has every chance to win.
And remember, he stayed in this two-man or one-man, one-woman race in 16 until June.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, that was when superdelegates, as they were known at the time, came out in force for Hillary Clinton. The same debate exists today over those. Now they're called unpledged delegates, but those same delegates. And I have a couple pieces of somewhat breaking news on those in Georgia. I surveyed all 15, well, I surveyed 15 superdelegates, the unpledged delegates in Georgia, who will play a very important role in what could be a brokered convention or a contested convention in July. And a majority of them said that essentially a candidate needs to have a majority, not a plurality, of those delegates to win. That means that if that's Biden or that's Bernie, they will need to have a majority, not just a plurality, coming in. And that's important because at first it seemed like Bernie Sanders would have that plurality but not that majority. But Super Tuesday might have rejiggered all that.
And Bernie was the only one who, when he was asked about this, said that the candidate who has a plurality should be the nominee.
Yep.
And the others said, no, we have to see what happens at the convention. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, the roles have been reversed.
Yes.
So it'll be interesting to see what he has to say if he goes into the convention Trailing Biden in delegates, but with Biden not having a majority, which is entirely possible.
Yeah, and secondly, I talked to Nikema Williams, who's the chairwoman of the Georgia Democratic Party, yesterday before the first round of polls were even closed, and she said, I want to go out there. I'm not going to endorse any candidate, but what I will do with my unpledged vote, if it gets to that, if it's needed, is I will support whoever Georgia supports in March 24th, which... If you go by how Bernie Sanders did in 2016, means whoever's not Bernie Sanders.
So it's got to be Biden in Georgia.
Yes,
for sure.
You would think so. All right. So one last thing about Bernie Sanders at this moment. We do spend time on this show talking about the harsh kind of rhetoric that we hear coming from Capitol Hill between Democrats and Republicans, the Trump tweets. We're going to talk about one of those in a little while. We talked about the Alabama Senate primary last night. We're talking right now about the harsh battle between Doug Collins and Kelly Loeffler. So a lot of the time we're focusing on the right and the problems that we see with their rhetoric. Audrey, the Elizabeth Warren is being hammered today by... Not all Bernie Sanders folks behave like this, but the nastiness being aimed at her on Twitter today because she hasn't gotten out of the race and therefore is hurting Bernie Sanders is really troubling to see.
And it's based, I think, on a lack of information. I mean, there's some assumptions they're making about Warren support. And Warren support is not necessarily totally overlapping. If you look at all the exit polls and you look at Warren, she is a much more complex creature. I was trying to make an ice cream analogy for the candidates, and she's very Neapolitan in the sense that, you know, she has people who vote based on identity. She has women supporters. She has people who are concerned about income inequality. She has, you know, lots of segments there. And she is not necessarily ideologically identical at all. In fact, she's very different and has a very different history than Bernie does. They're friends. There's a lot that they agree on. They work together. But at the same time, they really should not assume that her support is going to go to Bernie, nor that she was that much of a spoiler. I heard a lot of people saying, if only Warren was not there, Bernie would have. That's not necessarily true.
What's the path for Bernie now?
Oh, well, I actually kind of wanted to respond bit to Audrey's thing. I mean, I think the thing to kind of point out there is that as I'm looking through some of this stuff, Bloomberg was finishing third in a lot of these states. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that really kind of challenges this notion of Warren as spoiler, because it's not like she's in third place. Yeah, in Massachusetts, but in many other states, it was Bloomberg who was the other one. So, I think we need to be very, you know, very careful about how we attack people, especially when it's unwarranted.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think, you know, if Warren gets out, which she probably will in the next couple of days, a disproportionate share of her support will probably go to Sanders, but certainly not all of it. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens, I think, next week. There are a few primaries next week. Mississippi almost certainly will be Biden.
Michigan,
I think, is going to be extremely interesting. Sanders pulled off an upset win there in 2016 over Hillary Clinton, narrow victory. I think that's going to be very important for him. He needs to do well in Michigan to come back from this disappointing showing on Super Tuesday.
Yes, but considering that he is now calling for the retirement of all automobiles that burn fossil fuels, Michigan could be more problematic for him than it might have been.
and looking at what happened, some of the other in Minnesota, and it's, you know, in New England yesterday, it's clear. I think that Biden has a chance to do well there.
All right. We've got next week, March 10th, Hawaii, Idaho, Michigan, Mississippi, Missouri. Missouri will be interesting. North Dakota and Washington State, which is going to be a primary next time, not a caucus. Mm-hmm. And although Bernie seems to have a good support there, it's not going to be as easy in a primary state him to win the delegates as it would have been as a caucus.
That's part of what happened
state.
In Minnesota
in
as
Minnesota.
Well. Is that it switched from a caucus to a primary? And
all right. Let me pick up on another thing. I suspect that, Amy, there are Georgia political leaders like, say, Keisha Lance Bottoms, mayor of Atlanta, Calvin Smyre, a few others who have got on board with Biden early, who last week before South Carolina were thinking to themselves, how do I gracefully get out of this situation? They today are breathing the biggest sigh of relief and are celebrating.
They are. Now, I guess that, you know, again, I keep saying this, but, you know, I really felt like we were writing obituaries way early after Iowa and New Hampshire because there were, I mean, there were 48 states left and a bunch of territories, including American Samoa, who voted last night. And so we needed to sort of put that in. But I do think that there's something that's going on there and that certainly that is going to aid. I mean, you've got, I mean, people, they can now say, like, yes, there's a reason that I made this decision. There's a reason that I stayed in it for the long term and that I put my faith here. And I knew what was coming. I knew what the electorates looked like. And I, you know, figured that this is what was going to happen. Now the question is, what happens from here? Right now, there's a much more attention to some degree is going to be on both of them. I mean, they really, honestly, both Bernie and Biden kind of have been ignored in the debates and things like that. We're going to start to see a much smaller debate stage. They're going to have to do much more sort of defense of each of their own, and it'll be interesting to see what happens.
I heard from Calvin Smyre this morning, who said, "Hey, it's now a two-person race, as you'd expect them to say, but it's going to be interesting to see what endorsers, Georgia endorsers of Bloomberg do."
Yeah.
One of the biggest ones was Michael Thurmond, a frequent guest of the
finally
show.
Finally, just last week. Yeah. Said I'm officially there.
Yes, Senator Jim Jordan.
He had a big event Friday. I talked to him this morning. He said, look, all Democrats ought to be praising this man this morning of Michael Bloomberg. He's going to be Joe Biden's best friend if Joe Biden wins the nomination, because what does Joe Biden struggle with the most? Raising money. So he's already kind of pivoting to like the fact that Bloomberg could help the entire party.
Andre, that strikes me as exactly what you'd want to say. I mean, Bloomberg will be a force in this election, even though he is unlikely to be able to be the nominee.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it also has to be careful, because if it looks like he's bought Joe Biden and he owns Joe Biden, that actually creates optics that are problematic. So, I think it's the idea of his staff migrating over to Biden's staff. We do have to think about sort of what the funding stream looks like. And then there is the question of Bloomberg taking the role that he took in 2018 and helping down ballot races and helping to set up infrastructure. Like, that's more important and that's more diffuse. So it doesn't necessarily like automatically look to the naked eye like it looks like he's buying an election.
If I was Biden campaign, I don't want Mike Bloomberg's endorsement right now. I mean, I'd like him to get out of the race and keep spend his money in the general election.
Yeah, to go after Trump.
To go after Trump.
Yeah.
To help Democrats down ballot, but not in coming out and endorsing Joe Biden.
Yeah.
That is just going to help Bernie Sanders. It's going to make the argument for Bernie Sanders that Biden is the candidate of the billionaires.
I got to get to a break. You want a last word before the break, Audrey?
Yeah. The other thing is, boy, Biden has to perform.
Well, that's it. Mm-hmm. And we will see how that works out. Let's talk about that briefly when we come back from this break. All right, we just got a few minutes left with this fabulous panel today. Alan, you were the first one to allude to it, so I'll throw it to you on this. Biden does still have to perform. He is he can meander out there on the stage,
right,
at least. Still one of the great retail politicians. I covered his 88 campaign, was on the road with him a lot, and was just overwhelmingly impressed with how he does one-on-one with people. But get him up on a podium, and he can go off into fantasy land sometimes.
And now it's probably just going to be just the two of them on the stage in the next debate and any subsequent debates. It's almost certainly going to be just Biden and Sanders, and he's going to have to be able to respond to those attacks that are coming. Sanders is already told him, what's coming, so he better be prepared for that.
Yeah.
And he can't do any more of this, I say I'm almost out of time, he just stops. He just runs out
and
of things
to say. And
he's
got to keep his energy up. We were watching, Andre, a period of this race early this year where Hitt looked like he was going through the motions and the last thing he wanted to do was be running for president of the United States.
Yeah, one of the things that I have thought about is I've thought about whether or not Jomentum is actually real. And I think, we forget. Saturday was the
what
first time.
What did you call it?
Jomentum. I mean, that's what he called it. Saturday was the first time he ever won a primary.
Exactly.
Ever. He's been running for office since I was 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, or for president since I was 11. So this is So, you know, maybe now sort of having some, the wind under his wings might actually be giving him something where we may see a different type of Joe Biden. Okay. So, you know, we just have to wait to see.
That's really going to be interesting. You know, Amy, he already has one of the most compelling personal stories of any candidate for president in many, many decades. I mean, the loss of his first wife and child in an automobile accident just before he was sworn into the Senate, then the loss of his son to terrible cancer. So his personal story and his perseverance is already building an image of him that people just respond to in a positive way. Now, the comeback kid, you know, coming from back from the dead, you can be sure they're going to be using that line for quite a while as this campaign moves
Definitely.
Forward.
Definitely. And one of the other sort of recent things that has, you know, gotten a lot more attention and that he's been much more open about is also the fact that he has a lifelong issue with stuttering. And so a lot of the times that we see it as these sort of verbal gaffes, what it really is word replacement of trying to keep talking. It's a device or mechanism that those who have severe stuttering will utilize when they are getting stuck. Sometimes it's called word replacement, and there's other types of things. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that, a lot more of others around him really sort of pointing that out and setting up situations. He's did a really fascinating piece that I think was in The Atlantic, where he was interviewed by a reporter who also has a stutter, to really kind of break that down. And there was an instance, I think, where he was with a young child and, again, was talking about that. And so it's, again, these issues of things that he has sort of overcome and been successful with, but also to kind of show how we don't think about, you know, somebody who's been vice president of having, right, of having to deal with these sorts of issues, but yet he has.
All right, all of this said, I want to reiterate, Audrey, Bernie Sanders has enormous energy and passion that is no one is topping out there right now on the campaign trail. To look at some of the rallies that he was involved with coming in the last week or so, huge crowds of people. I want to just say it again. Bernie Sanders has a very strong path forward. I know we're talking about Biden today because it's Super Tuesday.
Well, and he's going to get more delegates in California.
Yes,
he's going to change that
number.
Yes,
he is. Yes, he is. So we're going to watch an incredible race moving forward.
Yes, and I think a lot of it will be about messaging. You know, what Biden really hasn't found his total winning message yet, and he needs to find it. And you know, he may have a great backstory, but I think he needs to concentrate on the you. It's about you. It's about unification. It's about solving problems. And be a foil for Trump, because that's really where he wins. He's so likable.
The contrast with Trump is just stunning there. But Bernie Sanders has a message that appeals to a lot of Democratic voters, especially younger Democratic voters, and he has a lot of money.
Yeah.
And he can keep raising money.
$2.70.
And he has a much stronger organizations in place in a lot of these states.
Yeah. And Biden doesn't really have a clear policy message yet. Like, it's not entirely clear what are the policies he's running on.
That's a good point. Greg, you need to get something.
Yeah, and let's be clear, too. President Trump is still coming into Georgia with a tremendous amount of strength. UGA has a poll that was released this morning, this School of Public and International Affairs, that shows that the president has a 54% approval rating in Georgia, and he beats all four of the top Democratic contenders in last night's Super Tuesday contest by about double digits, by about 8 to 11 points
each. But this was pre-Super Tuesday.
It was pre-Super Tuesday, obviously. It was
and
also
who did the best?
That's a bit of an outlier, I would say, for all the polling I've seen in Georgia. But there hasn't been much.
I'd
be surprised if that's exactly right.
But he's beating – and this will change, but and half the poll was also done pre-South Carolina, too. It was done in
Okay.
But it shows Bernie Sanders trailing Trump 52-41, Bloomberg 50-42, Biden 51-43, and Warren 52-42, all trailing Trump.
All right, we'll watch it unfold. I want to talk about, we're very short on time, but there's one other race we really should say a couple words about, Andre Gillespie. Jeff Sessions trying to win back that Senate seat he gave up after two decades of holding it in Alabama to become the attorney general. Couldn't pull it out last night. He's in a runoff with a football coach, Tommy Tuberville.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so there are a number of things. So saw President Trump's tweet where basically he goes after Jeff Sessions.
This is what happens to someone who loyally gets appointed attorney general, then doesn't have the wisdom or courage to stare down and end the phony Russian witch hunt, recuse himself on first day in office, and the Mueller scams begin.
Seriously?
Yes. So, I mean, so a couple of things. To Jeff Sessions' defense, there were four people who were in this race. So the idea that this was going to go to a runoff is not surprising at all. They have the same rules we do. You got to get 50% plus one. Second, and at the risk of sounding partisan or flip, thank you, Alabama, for not nominating Roy Moore again. Yes. So, like, that was very clear.
Yeah, Roy Moore got, like, 5% of the vote or something.
I do not agree with you.
Doug Jones
would have really wanted to see.
Yeah, Doug Jones would love to have had that.
I understand that, but just thank you.
I find it remarkable that Sessions last night in his speech talked about he was the first guy to have the guts to get up and endorse President Trump after the abuse, Greg, that President Trump has heaped on him. But Jeff Sessions, bless his heart, just stays loyal.
He sees the same polls we do, which showed Trump's approval rating among Republicans in Alabama at 90%+. So there's no other path for him.
It's amazing. All right, we are, I'm sorry to say, out of time for today's show. I really loved having you all here. Alan Abramowitz, Andrew Gillespie, Amy Steigerwald, who's reading something that's really making
the
her mouth
dry.
Tweet about Jeff Sessions.
Following the law is terrible.
Audrey Haynes, in your honor, because you come the farthest to be here from Athens, I wore today my applied political science T-shirt from your program at the University of Georgia.
And it looks marvelous on
you. Greg Bluestein, loved having you here. Really quick note, got a call from Andy Young's office the other day. And the call was, Andy wants to come in and do the show and argue with you. Now, Andy and I have known each other for 30 years. We kid about arguing, but we do. He'll be here tomorrow along with Heath Garrett and Kevin Riley. I don't know what he wants to argue about, but it'll certainly be fun. So join us for Political Rewind again tomorrow.